Live from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
We have tonight's guest, author of Hope for a New Era, Cynthia Rivard.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Susie Hansen. I am Mark Leisure, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
This episode of the Life Changes Show is titled A New Hope for a New Era. This is episode 849, and that title is inspired by our guest's book, which we will be talking about. And speaking of inspiration, I happily get invited to a lot of things, and it would be nice to go to so many more of them for many reasons, and for many reasons it's just not possible. I did, however, months ago, actually over a year ago, I was invited to a wedding. Didn't actually get the invitation until a few months back, but Filippo, you have to come to our children's wedding. And so I said yes over a year ago. And then several months ago, I saved the date. And a few months ago, I RSVP'd. And then things happened in my life where it just wasn't looking like it would be possible for me to go to this wedding. But I was doing everything I could. And those around me saw me like changing plans, making things, like doing things that I wouldn't normally be able to do in order to make this wedding. And I was asked on more than one occasion, like, why don't you just say you can't go? I mean, you don't go to a lot of things. And I said, right, I don't go to a lot of things, but I want to be there. And then a couple people asked me, could you enjoy weddings? Or because you know this one would be fun. And I said, oh, no, absolutely not. And I'm going. Because I'm part of the community, I'm part of the family, and I also know what it will mean to them to have me be there. And the energy I bring, and what I can say while I'm there, and to whom it'll make a difference. And I was told, I went, and I was told while there, all of those things. And so the first thing is that it really brought to my consciousness the fact that I made that much of an effort to get to this wedding, that so many people asked me, why do you go? Like, why do you have to go to this? That it made me stop and think that there's a reason beyond, oh, I'm going to go and I'm going to have fun, or I'm going to go for me, as a reason beyond. And it was for this couple, for this family. And interestingly enough, as I sat there at dinner, staring me in the face was a beautiful, what do they call it, wedding favor. And the wedding favor was very Italian traditional. And so for people who did not know that what this was and why, the couple had made a little card that was staring me in the face of why the tradition of the wedding favor and the particular Jordan almonds, which were in the favor. And so the card said, a traditional Italian wedding favor, Jordan almonds, 5 sugared almonds for each guest to eat to remind us that life is both bitter and sweet. And then it went on for 5 wishes for the newlyweds, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought, at first I thought, bitter and sweet, why do we have to put the bitter in there? And then I thought, funny me, life. And so we have an opportunity to look forward to the sweet. We have an opportunity to grab the sweet, the moments that are sweet, and enjoy them, to share them, to be part of them as much as possible. The opportunities for the bitter come whether we grab those or not. And so beautifully when I was reading our guest's book, Hope for a New Era by Cynthia Rivard, our guest. She wrote in there exactly something that resonated with me, so much that resonated with me, but I want to share one more thing before we go on with the rest of the show. We have, this is a quote from the book, we have just a short time on this planet to love, evolve, and help others. And this, she says, is the only reason we're here.
That seemed like it needed a moment of silence.
And a moment of silence we have had. Thank you, Mark.
This is a, it's an important time to be having this conversation. I'm really looking forward to tonight's show. With everything going on around the world and the kind of chaotic events we're living through, we couldn't be more on point with this conversation that matters.
Thank you, Mark. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to have this kind of conversation with people from all different kinds of or walks of life and experiences, because it, so many of us and so many people out there are speaking to this from, and then we're all, so many of us are saying the same thing, but they sound differently. And so to be able to take a moment and listen to each other from other people's words.
Absolutely. And just like your monologue states, sometimes you feel like a nut. Sometimes you don't.
A Jordan almond nut. And with that, our interview guest is a spiritual teacher. She's a business strategist, an environmental advocate, and she's an author of the book that we have been addressing, which is Hope for a New Era. We welcome Cynthia Rivard to the Life Changes Show. Welcome, Cynthia.
Oh, thank you so much. That was a beautiful segue. I appreciate it. It's great to be here.
Thank you for inspiring this. And actually, speaking of inspiring, Hope for a New Era, Turning the Tide, Love and Leadership Through Turbulent Times. So, Cynthia, you have had love for sure. You have led for sure. If you're human and you've been here more than a minute, you've had turbulent times of your own. And in your personal life, you have surely had to turn the tides. I got the feeling in reading the book that you have used from your personal experience, spoken from personal experience about what is possible.
So I'm sorry, what is the question? Am I speaking from personal experience?
Yes.
Oh. yes and no. I feel, you know, like so many very busy, I was a working parent, so many busy people moving through their lives. I lived in a little bit of a box, and what I knew was, you know, from me, my family, my community or work associates, not really what could happen further afield. You know what I mean? And a couple of years ago, I came into what some people refer to as a spiritual awakening. I started to get crystal clear guidance on a new path forward. And so a lot of what I share in the book made sense to me. It really resonated, but it wasn't necessarily on my radar prior to that time. A lot of it. I mean, I was throughout my career, I was a leader. But the way the information was presented to me, I wouldn't have written this book this way a couple of years earlier.
So in a sense, you were the decisions you've been making along the way, and you give examples in the book. I look and say, looking back, I obviously we can look back and say, okay, I could have done that differently and all that. One of the biggest decisions that I felt like you felt strongly about was making the decision to have a family and continuing to work, but not advancing in your field for the sake of the family. How would you talk about that then and now?
Well, it was absolutely the right decision. And I felt it again. I believe I was guided to the community I was in. It was a great place to raise children. And I had the benefit of, I was in executive leadership, and I had the benefit of a good job. There was just no growth where we were living, but it gave me flexibility to come and go and have a really short commute, which, you know, if you have any listeners, and I'm sure you do, who have a long commute, you can just imagine how much that helped me orchestrate what I needed to orchestrate in my very busy life. So more than a full-time job and raising four children.
Wow.
But so yes, there had to be things. There's always things that we have to choose, to prioritize, to get through. And so not moving around with the family or taking a new job every couple of years was an easy choice to be able to balance my life. And really, I felt like I had the best of both worlds.
I bring that up. I think it's honorable and wonderful. And I also feel like, as in your book, you are in a sense guiding from that place of there can be choice points that we make as we move into the future that feel like I'm being stunted over here, but what I'm actually doing is building over here. Does that work?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, I talk a lot about choice in the book because we're always making choices, whether we don't recognize it, because it's a choice to stay stuck. We are always making choices. And so, you know, it's important to look at the pros and cons, but to recognize if you're choosing to not move on something, it is still a choice.
Or not hear something, or not see something, or not learn more about it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So right in the book, there's a word that we all have heard, and some like it, some don't. It resonates with some, it triggers others. Hope. Uh-huh. Hope. What is your definition of hope, and what can we take away?
I am so glad you asked that. This is a favorite sharing point. So I define hope as faith in action. We have to believe in something, and I'm not saying, you know, anything specific, but something. And in the book, you know, I talk about a better future, and you have to have faith that we can create it, but then take action to help create it. And so it very much is a narrative about believing in yourself and taking action. Just those small little things each of us can do, because we have a sphere of influence and people that we impact in our lives, like our families or our coworkers. But just thinking about things, oh, I wish we could have a better future. No, that doesn't work. We have to trust that we can, have faith, and then take action to help make it happen. And what happens when you take even just a really tiny little step forward, small action, you feel more empowered. And then more ideas will come to you about what you can possibly do. And believe me, I can hear, you know, you were just talking about my career and motherhood and everything. I can hear all of those busy people listening, thinking to themselves, oh yeah, what, like I can squeeze one more thing into my life. And, you know, my tip there is just, it doesn't have to be huge. We all have time for what we prioritize. Again, it's a choice, and it doesn't have to be huge. What ends up happening when you look at all the ills in the world is we become overwhelmed. There's so much. What could I do? Where could I start? I don't know where to start. And so you stay in overwhelm and don't do anything. And I'm speaking very broadly. I'm sure a lot of people have taken many steps to do many things that they're proud of and feel inspired by and empowered by. But, you know, with what's going on around us in our communities or the world stage, there's always more we can do. And with each small action we choose to take, we feel more empowered. And we also, as it starts to steamroll, we inspire others by our action. You know, we lead by example.
Nice. And speaking of leading by example, we've spoken of family and you're speaking of community. And I don't know that many of us talk enough about what it means to be family or what it means to be in community and how to even go about securing that or being open to that or nourishing that. You gave a tip, and I'm just wondering if you have a tip for that.
Well, the breaking down and loss of community is a big part of some of our dysfunction in society. And it's not solely because we started to move around and away from families, because you can have community long distance. It's really just being able to give support, emotional support, and receive support. You know, do you have that community? It can be through online measures. But also, I think that even if you don't plan to stay in some place for very long, there's a real nurturing that we need to try and get to know and put a few roots into a community where we're living, even if it's just temporary. Because, you know, there are people who need what only we can deliver, by that, you know, that smile as you walk by and that offer to, you know, help go get medicine for your neighbor because they're a shut-in, or, you know, there's just, when you don't know anyone because you feel like you're just passing through because you were transferred there and maybe it's a large community, it's hard to meet people. Just that one or two that you meet and you get intentional about making a connection and giving or receiving support makes a world of difference for our, you know, our emotional health.
Inspired by what you just said, Cynthia, and what you also wrote in the book, I have this thought that sometimes it's easier to grow something than it is to start from scratch. And some people think that they are alone. And so that's pretty much starting from scratch. However, in the book, you say, when you are crystal clear that you are never alone and that God is with you, loving and guiding you always, there is no fear. Talk to us about this. You go on to say there is only faith in your direction and your yet unseen future. So talk to us about God's presence and our faith.
So first of all, I try and write from a universal standpoint, speaking of any particular religion, but just the universal truth that whatever you call God, source, Allah, is love, And each of us has an aspect of divinity within us. We call it, some people recognize it as intuition. Some people call it inner wisdom, but it's that guiding force within you that comes from divinity. And, you know, hears your prayers and is always with you, trying to guide you. And I believe when I mentioned it in the book, it was specifically to help people get through fear. When you tap
Yes.
into that inner wisdom that's always with you and you follow it, that's divinity guiding you. So there should be no fear, even though it's something new and different, and our instinctual programming will put us into a, you know, a fight, flight, or freeze response if we allow it. But if you're aware and you know, no, this is how I'm being guided. I need to do this thing, and I don't see the end result, but when I take this step, I'll understand what the next one might be. And I mean, there's not fearing how you sense you should take action, but then there is also the idea of reaching out and being part of a community, because you mentioned, you know, being alone, starting something new. There's so many things we can do that people are already working on and would love to have our help. And, you know, what a great way to get to know and, you know, find community where you live.
Nice.
But it's, you know, again, I had mentioned that feeling of overwhelm, because there's so many ills in the world, or just our small communities, so many ways that we may not feel like we have time or the skill set to make a difference. But there's, if you just start with one thing, you feel really called to make a difference. You know, maybe you're a parent and it has something to do with the local school system. There's probably other people already talking about it. So you don't have to, you know, I always recommend, don't start from scratch. Do your research. Maybe there's another town that already solved that problem, or, you know, people in your community that are already working on it. So it's such a great opportunity to get to know people and what's already going on, and then bring whatever skills you have forward for as much or as little time as you have. It's very empowering to just take an action to help.
Nice. Well, actually, empowering, and from other parts of the book where you've shared, it sounds like it's potentially the theme of our life. Like, actually, I mentioned a quote from your book in the monologue. Another quote is, we are created to be tribal in our nature. And then you go on to say that being in community with others has the ability to lift our spirits. It's even for ourselves, right? Improve mm-hmm. longevity and inspire us to be in service to others. And then finally, if you could elaborate on this, when everyone responds to their calling, the world will be a much richer, both in circumstances and on emotional plane of existence. Our calling, can we speak mm-hmm. about that?
Absolutely. So a lot of people talk about purpose, and I think that's the term I use a lot in the book. And we don't, you know, a lot of people wonder what their purpose is. Am I living it? And so there's a lot of misconceptions around purpose. First, it can change as you change and evolve over the course of your life. You don't have to figure it out, and you won't when you're 18 leaving high school or 22 leaving college. It will look differently over the years. And there may be a path you need to be on to explore new things and learn new things, meet new people that will take you to your next purpose. But this goes back to how I keep going back to listening to that inner knowing, or that intuitive nudge that you keep getting to explore something. Just follow the breadcrumbs, turn over a few rocks, just explore, be curious. We are all, so the overriding universal purpose we all have is to serve others. What that looks like is very, very different based on who we are, where we are, what our skill sets are, but it is to serve others. And through that service is how we serve or revere divinity, because they are in each of us.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely. And speaking of the future and what's possible, you envision a world which is very, it is different than our current experience. It also is different from the way we think. And one of the things that really stood out for me is that some of us are learning that war is profitable. Like, we might not have even known that, but war is profitable to somebody. And you go on to say, well, let's look at, or we can look at, how peace is profitable. And in that part, especially of the book, I thought, how? And you started to answer that. Could you share that with our audience, please?
Sure. Well, you know, economies thrive when consumers feel safe and start looking around and spending money. You know, if you feel any kind of a threat, you're going to go into more of a hoarding mode than spending. So there may be, you know, economies fueled by, if you're part of the war machine, you know, creating weapons. But other than that, businesses don't thrive because everyone's scared to spend money and innovate. Innovation is how businesses really thrive, you know, to stand out, because I'm not a believer in competition. We need to be unique and serve in unique ways. Well, who's going to innovate when you're at war and people aren't spending money? Mm. So, I mean, if you just picture yourself feeling physically threatened all the time, or you're not going to spend money. Mm. And it's probably all being collected by the government to fund the war effort anyway. So I don't know who profits during a war, but it is not the typical citizen who profits or thrives, for sure.
Yeah, in any which way. You mentioned competition, and it reminds me in the book where you talk about education and educating the children about, I don't remember the words, co-creating or working together as versus competition. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. Well, I have a whole area where I talk about a vision for this better era that we want to co-create and move into. And really, we do need to look at and reimagine every structure and system of our societies, because they all really need an overhaul. We're at a point where many of them, the band-aids just are not going to work anymore. We need to reconstruct the whole thing. And, you know, I was very lucky. I love the educators and the school systems that I got to work with as my children were growing up. But there in general tends to be more of a, you know, don't question, explore, discover, study for the test, try and be the best student because you're a good test taker, which is really demeaning to children. And they have so many gifts that school does not inspire them to lean into, to feel good about themselves. And then there's this competition mindset. What our society has gotten into with sports or scholastics, both. And in school, you've got both going on, and the poor child that's not good at either one, and yet they have so much to offer the world, but they aren't necessarily being developed in the right ways to explore and figure out what that is. So I just think that there's a lot of different ways we can reimagine education so that children feel nurtured and can lean into their gifts, whatever they are. And there's not this competition and studying for the test, which, you know, I was a very good student because I wanted to earn praise from the authority figures. And I would promptly forget what I learned right afterward. I got the A's, but it doesn't mean anything if you haven't had this love of learning instilled in you.
Love of learning. Well, I was surprised how many topics you touched on in the book, and then perusing your YouTube channel, I thought, oh, this is like an extension of what you do on YouTube. So I want to plug YouTube, where you talk about so many topics on your short video format. So good on you for that.
Thank you.
Hope for a New Era is the title of the book. Goes on to the subtitle is Turning the Tide, Love and Leadership Through Turbulent Times, Cynthia Rivard. Now, cynthiarivard.com is where you can get the book. Of course, the book, I think it just came out, is available where books are sold. Cynthia, R-I-V-A-R-D.com. She's also on YouTube and on the socials, and you will find the links for those at the Life Changes Show or at Cynthia Rivard. And Cynthia, I'm wondering if we could close with a 30-second, 1-minute commercial teaser on what you call the golden era. What do we have to look forward to should your vision come true?
Well, I think the overriding thing that we all want is peace, feeling safe and at peace, and everything else, all the beautiful love and delicious emotions we get to feel and the way we can support and love each other will stem from that. But I think that peace is at the center of it. And won't that feel amazing when we get there? And I believe we will see it in our lifetime, but we have a lot of work to do between now and then.
We do. And you illustrate some of that in your book. And we are happy to have had you on and happy to have connected and felt the love and joy and peace that you shared with us today. Thank you so much, Cynthia. All the best to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you. It's been a delight to meet you.
Delight right back at you. Thank you. Mark, I feel like, again, I actually said this earlier, but these are the conversations that I'm interested in having.
Precisely why we came together and what we've aspired and intended and executed on for so many years. It's an honor to be in the circle. Thinking about that word peace and how it gets misused. And more importantly, it just was kind of ringing in my mind while she was speaking as to how many people choose something other than peace so consistently.
You know, interestingly, to be able to speak about peace while being in peace or using peaceful words. I've actually heard people, nothing against them, but it has happened. And maybe I've done that myself too. Like, we have to have peace as opposed to
like fighting for peace.
Yes. Yes. And it's an interesting juxtaposition. I know I've done it. I know I've done it. I want to be happy. I just want to be loved.
I'm not angry.
I'm not angry. So being able to have this conversation in the way that we did.
Peacefully.
Peacefully.
Absolutely. And joyfully.
And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Daniel, and I believe that my OCD obsessing about my loved ones believing they might possibly get hurt and my needing to keep them safe is exhausting my soul. 3 months after my mom's suicide, one of my dearest human friends overdosed and died. Ever since then, I have been in the obsessive, anxious state of mind. Please help me as I do not know what to do to calm down.
Dear Daniel, thank you for trusting me with something so deeply personal and painful. What you are experiencing is completely understandable, given the trauma and loss you've endured. The pain of losing your mother to suicide, followed so soon by another beloved friend's overdose, would shake the foundation of anyone's world. And for someone with OCD or an anxiety-based disorder, it can push your mind into overdrive, trying to control the uncontrollable, keeping everyone safe. The good news is that knowing how amazing you are and that you can begin to gently untangle this and help yourself calm your mind and care for your soul. When trauma strikes, especially in quick succession, the brain's safety mechanisms can go into high alert. For someone with OCD, the mind becomes like a hypervigilant security system, constantly scanning for threats and issuing false alarms. What you're feeling is not a failure or weakness. It is your nervous system trying to protect you and your loved ones. But it's exhausting and it's not sustainable. I believe the first step is for you to calm your system when anxiety spikes, and I suggest that you try some grounding exercises. One of my favorite exercises to stop worrying is to create a worry window. Instead of trying to stop the thoughts, which never works, you can schedule 15 minutes a day where you allow yourself to write down or think through your worries. Once outside of that window, gently say to your mind, "Thank you, we'll deal with that later." This approach taught my brain that the obsessions aren't emergencies, and I believe this exercise could do the same for you. It could also be helpful to use this simple mantra once you have closed the worry window. I have used this mantra in the past with great success. I am safe. My loved ones are on their path. I release what is not mine to hold. I'm allowed to rest. I'm allowed to breathe. I'm doing the best I can, and that is enough. And dear Daniel, please remember that you are not broken. You are not responsible for every possible outcome. You are worthy of peace. You are allowed to stop feeling it is your job to fix everyone. You deserve help, healing, and gentleness, especially from yourself. And please know that you're not alone. I'm here whenever you need to talk.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
Well, for our performance segment, we are featuring the leader of the band. What band? The Susie Hansen Latin Band. She's also a violinist and a composer. We welcome Susie Hansen to the Life Changes Show. Hey, Susie.
Hey, Filippo. Nice to be here.
Nice to finally connect with you here, even though big thank you to, I think it was Valerie, who introduced us first before Paul Frederick.
Valerie
Peterson. Yes, of the Big Lucky Big Band. So thank you to them, and thank you to you. You know, Susie, I was trying to make the connection of how Susie and a violinist became the leader of the band, and not just any band, the Susie Hansen Latin Band. And you took me all the way back to being a little girl, and it all made sense, kind of.
it did kind of make sense.
Kind of. It really did. I mean, yeah. Wait, just wait till you hear.
Would you like to hear it again?
I would, actually. And I think the audience would too.
Well, my father was my violin teacher. I started at age 5, and he played in the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. And he taught me. I had a lesson every Sunday of my childhood. And then when I was in college, I kind of gave up with the music for a while and got into science and engineering. But then after college, when I was on my way to graduate school, I got into playing music again. And, you know, I'd studied for so many years with my father. I was really pretty advanced. And I didn't do the route that most musicians do. I didn't go to conservatory. But I did get back into music. And when I got back into it, my father was very supportive. And my mother and my sister, who were both into my being into mathematics, said I couldn't do it. I'd missed too many formative years. I hadn't gone to music school. But my father just sent me money quietly every month so that I could take lessons and continue on my path. And then I got into music, and I started by playing a lot of improvised music. I also took violin lessons from the head of the New England Conservatory of Music while I was at school at MIT. And he was my teacher, the head of the string department at New England Conservatory. So I studied classical again, but I got into improvised music right away, and I played rock and funk and R&B and classic rock, and I played bluegrass and country music and Irish and old-timey music, and I played all these great music that I really enjoyed. But then I discovered jazz, and jazz to me was just head and shoulders more interesting than anything else I'd played. So I studied jazz seriously, and I also studied. I also worked professionally. And then one day I got invited to play in a Latin jazz band. And I said, well, what do I know about Latin jazz? And the leader of the band says, oh, you'll get it and you'll love it. And he was right. I got it and I loved it. And I never looked back. I've played Latin jazz now ever since.
Well, so much so that you made a band, Susie Hansen Latin Band. Susie, you left out one of my favorite parts.
What was that?
The part of what schools you went to and what you studied.
Well, I went to University of Illinois for mathematics. And then when I graduated from there, I went to MIT and studied electrical engineering. And I had a free ride all the way through the PhD program because I had a scholarship, and I just couldn't do it. I had to play music, and I bailed with my master's, and then I started my career.
Now, see how it explains everything. Now it all makes sense. One thing for sure, the music makes sense. Actually, this title, just to be clear, we're going to hear this song, which in my Spanish, I can tell it translates to it's too late. So es muy tarde. It's a cha-cha-cha. I don't think we've ever featured a cha-cha-cha on the Life Changes show. So this is exciting. And this is your cha-cha-cha. What is it's too late about, or es muy tarde about?
Well, the lyrics to the coro, that's the chorus, are it's too late, it's much too late, forget it, forget her.
Oh, drama. Okay. Well, the rest would probably be self-explanatory, except it is in Spanish. So brush up, because here we go. This is Susie Hansen and the Susie Hansen Latin Band with her song Es Muy Tarde in Español, pre-recorded here on for the Life Changes show.
Thank you. se fue muy lejos, tiene otro amante, ya me olvidó.
Es muy tarde, olvídalo, demasiado tarde, olvídala.
Solo quedan los recuerdos, las emociones y los abrazos que un día me dio. Estaré listo para recibir a mi nuevo amor.
Es muy tarde.
Es muy tarde with Susie Hansen there on the violin. Susie, who was singing?
So that's Cheo Negron. He used to be in LA, but he lives in Puerto Rico now.
Nice. Well, I don't know for whom this song or about whom it was written, and I'm sorry for them if it was too late and it was good and now it's not, but I'm glad we all got a good song out of it. Is this the song that people say, oh, I know this song? It has a feel. Is that the one?
Yes.
One of people, them?
That's the song that people always like it and recognize it and ask me who wrote it, and I say I wrote it, and they go, oh, wow. And when we play parties where we're playing all familiar songs, we can always pop that one in. People will always, always dance.
Nice. Well, Susie Hansen, SusieHansen, SusieHansen.com is her website. She's on the socials, Facebook, LinkedIn. Check her out. Her band is there. We have a video of her and her band at the Life Changes Show page for Susie Hansen. And Susie, you do a lot of events, and you definitely play Latin music. What are some of the songs that people would recognize? Just give us some titles and feels, or would it be rhythms or styles? Like cumbia, what is that? Like, is that a style? I don't even know. How do you say that? Is that a feel? Well,
yeah, cumbia. It's a dance.
A dance. Okay.
Uh-huh. And so, it's, you know, comes out of Colombia, and it's certainly been a adopted by Mexico. And since Southern California is so full of Mexican Americans, cumbia is far and away the most requested song for dances. But we also play a lot of salsa, and salsa comes from Puerto Rico and Cuba, especially from Cuba, and of course from New York. And that is the more sophisticated, the more syncopated music. And you have to, people feel like you have to be a real good dancer to dance salsa. The step is really the same for both salsa and cumbia, but the music is more syncopated and often faster. And so the salsa dancers kind of live in rarefied air. They think they're pretty cool, you know, and the cumbia dancers are just everybody.
Well, I don't know how to do it. Actually, I can cumbia. It's been a while, but I don't know how to do the dances that you feature in your music, but I know that I can dance in my chair while I'm listening to them. I got to enjoy that.
Well, Filippo, if you can dance cumbia, it's the exact same step for salsa.
Only faster?
It's often the exact same tempo, but the difficulty people have in dancing with salsa is that the bass is no longer on the beat. On the salsa, the bass is going ba 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 do ba ba do ba ba, and in salsa, the bass is going ba do ba do ba do ba do ba. So it's on the upbeat, and so people get thrown a little bit.
You just threw me. I'm not even dancing. Before we hear the next piece, which is very different, when I'm hearing mariachi music, I do see a violin, so that wasn't foreign to me. But the violin has been a part, whether people think of it or not, it's been a part of the culture or Latin music for a while, right? I don't know that it's been featured as much as you feature it, but tell us more about the violin in Latin music.
Well, for salsa, the violin is from a traditional form of the music. The roots of salsa are charanga and conjunto and danzón. And all three of those musics, well, not conjunto, but charanga and danzón, feature lots of violin. So the Cuban music has kept the violin in, but salsa has kind of let violin go to the side. And in Cuban music, the violin plays a rhythm role, like the piano. You know how the piano plays Montuno? Well, the violin goes. So it's playing the violin. It's the only start of music that I know of other than old timey and bluegrass where the violin gets to play in the rhythm section.
Nice. Okay. Well, thank you for that.
But let me tell you a little more.
Okay. So
in my band, the violin plays the rhythm role, but I also take the role of a trumpet. So we have a horn section of violin, tenor, and trombone. And the typical jazz horn section is trumpet, tenor, and tenor sax, and trombone. So I'm playing the same role typically a trumpet player would play in a jazz band or in a salsa band. And so I get to play the trumpet because I'm playing electric violin, and so it's strong and punchy like a trumpet is. And then, of course, because it's my band, I get to take solos on every song.
Because it's my band. you know, speaking of solos, from what you just did there when you were demonstrating, sounds like, do you take some scat solos singing wise?
No, not very often, but I have in the past.
Of course you have. Well, this next piece, I know when you gave a description, it was Latin jazz, but even before I saw the description of it, I thought, wow, this sounds like a Latin big band jazz. Does it
Nice.
Right? Does it have that big bandy feel?
You know, one of the roots of salsa, besides the three Cuban music I told you, charanga, conjunto, and danzón, the other big root of salsa is big band jazz.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. And so salsa has much of the same form as a big band chart. So if you've got a big band, you know, you play the melody with all the horns and maybe you have somebody sing and you have solos, but it has instrumental parts that are written. They call them shout chorus, typically in big band. In salsa, you call it the mambo. And that's where the whole horn section comes in and plays in harmony, plays together or counterpoint. So yes, it's definitely based in big band. So it's very astute observation, Filippo.
Well, but I'm not the musicologist. Or maybe I am and didn't know it. But you are. Interesting. Thank you for sharing that. And so we're going to get to hear this pre-recorded piece of Susie Hansen's and performed by her and the Susie Hansen Latin Band. This is instrumental.
Oh, wait a minute. Don't tell them the name of it. I want to tell a story.
Okay.
I wrote this with David Stout, who was a trombone player in my band for many, many years. And he retired about a couple of years before the pandemic. But he was a real good writing partner for me. I wrote at least 10 of the songs we've recorded with him. So we wrote this song very fast. It just came right out. And then after the song was finished, I said, well, what are we going to call it? And he said, oh, I don't know. You name it. I said, well, no, I named the last song. You name it. And he said, well, no, I don't know what to call it. You name it. And I said, okay, let's call it You Name It.
Well, when you sent me the email with the song, actually, as Susie sent me several songs and we all got to enjoy them all, this is where we landed. And I thought, is she wanting me to name it? No, she should name it. But that's no, it's funny. You Name It. So this is pre-recorded. Susie Hansen and the Susie Hansen Latin Band, You Name It, here on the Life Changes Show. that song? You name it. Susie Hansen and the Susie Hansen Latin Band. Again, Susie, SusieHansen.com. Susie's all over Los Angeles and other places with her band. Susie, thank you so much for sharing your music, your stories, and educating us. All the best to you. We'll see you on the socials. Hopefully we'll all get to see you in person. Anywhere else people should look for you?
We're always on Facebook. You can find the calendar on my website, susiehansen.com. We're playing this week at the California Botanic Garden in Claremont. Nice. And we're playing next week at the Jazz Salon downtown at the LA Athletic Club. And then right after that, we're playing at Huntington Beach Concert in the Park. Bunch of concerts coming up.
Bunch of concerts. Look for Susie Hansen. Susie, thank you again. Until we meet again, all the best to you.
My pleasure. Nice to talk with you, Filippo.
Lovely to chat with you and get to share you, your music, and your stories here on the Life Changes Show. And with that, a big thank you to Susie Hansen, and another big thank you to Cynthia Rivard. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeune, and our whole team here at the Life Changes Show, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.